This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson.
Dave Stryver loved the university, at least most of the time. Every now and then, without warning, a wave of, well, it was true. A wave of hatred rose up and flowed like molten blood through every cell in his body.
Those are the opening lines of a short story by an author named Brutus.
He needed the signatures of three people on the first page of his dissertation, the priceless inscriptions which, together, would certify that he had passed his defense. One of the signatures had to come from Professor Hart.
Never heard of Brutus? He, or it, is a piece of software programmed to write fiction.
Okay, my name is Selmer Bringsjord, and for the most part, what I do is try to figure out how to impart the kind of things that we consider to be distinctively human to machines. In other words, make smart machines.
Bringsjord is a professor at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. In order to make the Brutus fiction writing machine, Bringsjord and his colleague had to teach it all kinds of complicated information about the world. Not just specific facts, but how universities work, how humans behave, and something else that's harder to quantify.
Dave, Professor Hart prodded softly. God, they were pitiful. Pitiful, pallid, and puny.
We both harbored sort of dreams of, you know, being fairly decent writers ourselves. So there's a certain set of bag of tricks that Brutus had for saying things like that at the right time to convince the reader that, you know, wow, there's something really deep linguistically going on here.
Dave, did you hear the question?
Today in Studio 360, we're looking at computers writing stories, painting pictures, designing new products, and whether we're now at the point whether we can say that a computer program like Brutus is creative.
Not at all. The machine is just doing what you're programming it to do. If a machine is to qualify as genuinely creative, it must be such that even the designer of the system, knowing the algorithms involved, knowing the basic data structures, is completely mystified as to how this output just came out of the machine. Because in my opinion, if that's not the case, then basically all we're doing is just cloning our own intelligence.
In other words, as long as the system is just following the rules people give it, it doesn't meet some minimum threshold of what it means to be original, as well as skillful and interesting. But Stephen Thaler insists that his computers have long since met that test.
I am president and CEO of Imagination Engines Incorporated, and we build the world's most important form of AI called the creativity machine.
You have no false humility about what you do.
Well, it's not me I'm talking about. I'm talking about something that is the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life, apart from my wife, of course, if she's listening.
Thaler's creativity machine has designed all kinds of things, from snack foods to military systems to music. The creativity machine software is an artificial neural network with two distinct functions. One part that contains data and another that runs tests and gives feedback. It learns from itself. Thaler's breakthrough is to take that smoothly functioning program and occasionally disrupt it. He does that by sending mathematical noise into the system to trip it up.
It basically drives the rest of the neural network to activate into a false memory or confabulation. And therein is where discovery takes place. It's not in the rote memories of what we have committed to memory. It's in the generalization of those memories to whole new concepts or plans of action.
In other words, the noise breaks the programmed rules, confuses the network a little bit, and thus forces it to think in new ways. That's how the creativity machine generates its eureka moments. For instance, Thaler used it on contract for Oral-B to come up with a better toothbrush.
When we injected noise into the first network, it imagined not the memories of toothbrushes it had previously seen. It produced confabulations, false memories that were hybridizations of what it had seen before, very cheaply. I mean, there were no rules involved, no human programmers. You know, I basically just pushed a return button, sat back, and watched 2,000 new designs emerge, and I gave the customer 200 designs.
Thaler's machine has developed terrain-sensing robots for NASA and swarm robots for the Air Force. He believes there's essentially no problem that his super-powered artificial intelligence system can't or shouldn't take on.
It's basically the way we are going to cure cancer. It's the way we are going to do the multi-trillion dimensional optimizations to bring some peace of mind to the world economy to keep people from killing each other over their respective beliefs and to heal the ecology. And this is stuff that should be in the White House.
He's not kidding. Sounds a little Dr. Strangelovian, but who knows? Right now, we can use all the reality-based problem-solving we can get. As far as making art goes, Professor Bringsjord says humans still have the upper hand, for the moment.
When people come to ask me, and I do get this question, I think many people in AI get this question from parents, aren't you presiding over putting humans out of work? Well, I have to be honest. Pretty much, because when you take creativity out of the equation and say, can a machine do X, where there is no requirement for creativity, I think the future might be rocky. But, you know, writers and creative writers and so forth, I don't think there's much to worry about there for a very long time. Creativity is a very tough nut to crack.